The Business on RTÉ Radio 1 with AIB. We know that your focus is on your business. That's why ours is on supporting you.
But first, we're joined by two members of a family whose business was an early introduction to Ireland for the likes of Facebook, Google and Dropbox. Glandor is a property company that rents out workspaces in Dublin, Cork and Belfast with revenue in excess of 20 million euro this year. It's a family business set up by Michael Kelly, who is originally from a small farm in Caltra, County Galway. His three daughters are partners in the company and we're joined by Michael and one of those daughters, Claire. Claire, I'm going to start in a slightly random place, actually, with you. And far and away, the famous Tom Cruise, Nicole Kidman film shot in Ireland. I understand you got to watch that movie shoot as a teenager outside the first building your dad started out with in Fitzwilliam Square. How did that come about?
So we found out very close to the time that it was about to be shot that number 33 would be in shot. And so myself and my older sister, we begged Dad to allow us to stay in. The movie was going to be shot overnight and we begged him to allow us to sleep in the house overnight to watch the shoot taking place.
It was a bit like that Coke break ad, was it, where you were looking all looking out the window at Tom Cruise?
Exactly, exactly. So he had a running scene past the building, so we had to be very quiet and hunched down for that. but we had a great time, and it was such a novelty. But I think we were more excited by the free food from the food trucks, really, than the Hollywood actors at the time. But it was a real novelty and lovely thing to be able to say. And actually, we got very invested in that film. We learned every line off afterwards.
Irish accents.
Exactly. It wasn't probably as big a hit in the box office, but it was definitely a big hit in our house.
Well, I remember at that time when they were filming it, I was doing historical walking tours of Dublin, bringing tourists around, and they converted a whole street in Temple Bar into 19th century Boston or something. And
yes,
I have to say, it was great for business. And Michael, was it good for you, as they say? Did you get any money out of it?
I was asked for the use of the house very late on, and I sensed an opportunity here because my daughter Rebecca was in Crumlin Hospital at the time, suffering from leukemia, and they were fundraising for all their worth, and I saw an opportunity to get money for Crumlin Oncology Unit. So I got about 15 grand off the organisers and met Tom Cruise in the process.
And that must have, you know, was something helpful, obviously, for a very good cause, when it must have come at a very difficult time for you. Your daughter Rebecca had been diagnosed with leukemia at a very early age.
She was 2.5. She was diagnosed in January 1991. And it was a most awful blow, because I was very aware of an awful illness leukemia was, because I worked in the pharmaceutical industry for 10 years. It was like waking up to a nightmare. But thankfully, Rebecca has recovered. It took 5 years of treatment and she got the all clear in 1996. And she's well, and she's now working in the business and she has two children.
And the doctor who looked after her, you ended up having a good relationship with that doctor.
I did. His name is Finn Brannock, and I regard Finn Brannock as a saint. And we're still friends, and we have a WhatsApp group, and we're communicating on a regular basis.
Right. And I want to ask you a bit about business, Michael. Business had been in the family going way back generations for you.
Well, that is true, although I didn't realise that when I was a youngster. I've become much more aware of it in more recent times. My great-grandfather basically ran Tuam. He was a merchant in the 1820s. He was a banker in the 1830s. And he was a builder stroke large farmer in the 1840s, 50s. And in the 1840s, he built a brand new corn mill in Tuam. And in the 1850s, he built a flax mill in Tuam and tried to revive the flax industry in the area. So he was a very, very entrepreneurial fellow, and was also involved in politics, as a matter of fact. He was very involved in the repeal movement and was on platforms with Daniel O'Connell when he came to the west of Ireland.
Where did he make his money originally?
His father was also called Patrick Kelly, and he had three mills in Tuam. He had a flax, he had a woolen mill, he had a corn mill, and he had a linen mill. And there was a huge business in linen in Tuam in the late 1700s and the early 1800s during the Napoleonic Wars. Massive demand for linen. So, yeah, the family were well-to-do back then.
Was this a case of, you know, 50 years to build it and 6 months to blow it, or the following generations?
The famine wreaked havoc in Ireland. The small tenants weren't able to pay the rents, and the people who were receiving those rents went bust, as well as the tenants. Obviously, it was far worse for the tenants, because a lot of them starved and emigrated and so on. But the people who owned the merchants and the landlords also went bust.
When you were growing up, you grew up on a small farm, and at one stage you went to England to get a job. Was it with your brother?
I went with my brother John, and we worked in Birdseye Pea Factory.
Where was that? Anywhere glamorous? No.
It was a lovely place called Grimsby. Not very glamorous, I have to say, but we were there to make some money in the pea season. And on the very first day that we worked there, we were asked to do some overtime, and we did. And 4 hours went to 8 hours, and then we got 8 hours overtime every day. And that went on for 6 weeks, 7 days a week. In 1969, we earned £45 a week.
So did you get any sleep even?
Oh, we did. We ate well in the factory canteen, and we slept well. That's all we did.
And when it came then to before you set up your own business in property, yeah, you had worked in pharmaceuticals, and you'd worked with Johnson Brothers.
My first job out of college was as a medical representative for Eli Lilly, and I subsequently went to work with Glaxo Laboratories. So I had 10 years in the pharma industry. But I got a job with Johnson Brothers, and that was the most interesting job, because Johnson Brothers were a distributor in Ireland, and over the years they represented about 40 different companies, ranging from household goods, health and beauty goods, food products, confectionery products, the works.
And do you remember, Claire, do you remember when your dad was working in that job?
I do very well. It was for much of my childhood, actually, the majority of my childhood, he worked in Johnson Brothers.
Was there sort of free stuff coming into the house much, Claire?
There was the sample. So Dad was very, very proud of all the products that he represented and promoted, and very loyal to them. So we were not allowed to buy any of the competitor brands. It was only, a couple of the brand names that would have been very, you know, launched around that time would have been Wash and Go, and very proud. It was very innovative. Shampoo and conditioner in one bottle.
I remember it well. It was a revolution.
It was a revolution. And we went everywhere.
That was probably your phrase, Michael. You probably came up with that, did you?
I didn't. But as we launched Wash and Go, we met Vidal Sassoon. And I remember we had dinner with Vidal Sassoon in the King's Citric Hotel in Howth one night as we were launching it. And we got all present to sign the menu, including Vidal Sassoon. And Vidal himself said, "Wash and go for it."
he was on message with his own.
He was on message, yeah.
And what about property then? You had, at an early age, shown an interest in investing in property.
I was a very fortunate man. I rented a flat in Terenure from a lovely man called John Killian. I was 21 at the time. And John said to me, "If you're thinking of buying a house, Michael, let me know and I'll put you in touch with the right person." So a couple of years later, I was 23, I told John I was interested in buying a property, and he said, "Lovely, I'll set up a meeting for you." So he introduced me to Mrs. Moore of PC Moore Solicitors, and she said, "How much are you looking for?" And I said, £11,500. And she said, "Very well." And she picked up the phone and she said, "Hello, Kevin, I have Michael Kelly here. He needs £11,500. Will you look after that?" And he obviously said yes, because she put the phone down and she said, "Michael, that's the mortgage organised." So that was my start in property. I purchased that property, and 2 years later I purchased the second, and another year later I purchased the third, and I was on my way.
it, you know, at age 23 and the very short phone call, it really does sound like two worlds away compared to the situation now, for particularly for people who want to just buy a house to live in.
It is very different, very, very different. The bank due diligence has gone bananas, in my view. Bank credit committees have gone bananas, in my view.
So you moved, you had that, so you had that property, and then you had your eye on other properties, and you were thinking about stepping up in terms of how many you might buy or what you might do with them.
Hmm. Well, in 1981, I purchased my first commercial property, and that required me to offload some property that I had. So I put the property in Terenure on the market at the end of July, and I got a response very quickly. And the response came from a nun, as it happened. And she came to see it and thought it was appropriate. So she called me the next day and said, could you bring more of the nuns back? Now, I had the house let in flats, and one of the flats was occupied by four young fellows, and they had the walls plastered with Playboy centrefolds. So I had to rush to the house and remove those centrefolds before the nuns arrived. And we got that done, met the nuns, did a tour of the house, and we came back to the hall, and the Reverend Mother said to me, how much for the house, Michael? And I said, £55,000. And she said, 52. And I said, no, 54. And she said, 53. I said, 53.5. And she said, done. And we got the deal done within a week.
She said 54, we can keep the poster. But around about that time, and it would have been the early days of the business, that your daughter Rebecca was diagnosed with leukemia, and the kind of shock that would have riven through the whole family. Do you remember, Claire, what that period was like for you? Because Rebecca was your little sister. Is your little sister?
She is, and there's a. Well, I don't like to talk about how big an age gap it is generally, but there's close to 7 years between myself and Rebecca, and there's 2 years between myself and my older sister. So when Rebecca was born, she was utter joy. She brought so much joy to the family. We were absolutely besotted with her. We were old enough to remember exactly, you know, the day, the time, you know, exactly where we were when she was born. We doted on her like a real life doll. So when we found out that she had been diagnosed with leukemia, obviously we didn't probably understand at that time, myself and Fiona, the gravity of it. But obviously our lives were very disrupted. We moved in with my auntie and uncle. And there was a bit of a novelty to having sleepovers back to back with our cousins, who we were very close to. But obviously as the weeks and months went on, and we really missed her. And she was in isolation. So probably after the first few weeks, we were eventually allowed in to see her. But she was behind... She was in a ward and she was behind a glass door. And I have a very vivid memory of seeing a little gap in the threshold of the door, and she would put her fingers underneath and I put my fingers underneath. And that was as much touch that we had for a number of months. So it was very, very traumatic. And you know, for us, it pales into insignificance in comparison to what, you know, mum and dad went through. And having children of my own now, I can't imagine the trauma and the stress that it would have brought on both of them.
Michael, I'm sure it's hard to describe the sense of dark days that would have brought with that, even though, you know, there's been such a happy ending for Rebecca, for yourselves, for the family. It must have been really stressful, and you'd have to try and figure out, what do you say to your other children? How upfront are you about what the dangers might be, or the perils, or how you're feeling?
I don't recall that we explained the gravity of the situation to Fiona and Rebecca, but it was difficult. When she was diagnosed first, because she was a girl and because she was young, we were told the prognosis was very good. But after a month of treatment, they told us the prognosis was very poor. And so that became even more difficult. But when we got to meet Finn Branagh, because initially Rebecca was diagnosed in Harcourt Street Hospital and we moved her from Harcourt Street to Crumlin. And I had known Finn Branagh in the when I was in the pharmaceutical business. So Finn reassured me that he would do everything possible to get Rebecca through it. And he said to me, he said, I'm going to fill her full of chemo just short of killing her. We're going to get this cancer. Yeah. But she got through it. And she's a wonderful girl now. We're very fortunate.
And of course, she's working in the business as well. And I'm going to ask you about that. But other adversity that, as a family, you've had to deal with. Your wife, Catherine Michael, died in tragic circumstances, and you know, an indescribable blow, I'm sure, and how difficult to deal with. What sort of impact did that have on the whole family?
Catherine had been ill for some time, and her death was a most awful blow. And you don't realise the extent of it until it happens. But again, as somebody said to me shortly afterwards, a good friend of mine said to me, he said, Michael, you're very lucky. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, Michael, you have to go on. You have four children to look after. You have to go on. And I am resilient, and I'm fortunate in that regard. But I have four beautiful children. They're adult children now, but they are four beautiful children. I'm very proud of them.
And Claire, was there an opportunity for all of you to spend time together after your mum had died? And how valuable or important was that?
Well, I recall very vividly Daddy being very much available, not just physically present, you know, Dad being available, but also emotionally present and available to us. And we grieved very much together. We spent, you know, we went away to Spain, actually, to my auntie loaned us her apartment in Spain, and we went away straight away to spend time together. And you know, we rallied around each other. Rebecca was 13. I was 20 at the time. My older sister was 22. Rebecca was 13, and Alexander, our youngest brother, was 10.
I'm sure, Claire, you have lots of great memories of your mother. Were you very close to her?
Mum and I were very close. We were quite opposite, probably, in a way, and that was probably why we were quite close. So her passing was, it just left a huge hole in all of our hearts, and still does. It's still very difficult. And, you know, we've had 9 children between us now in the last 10 years, myself and my sisters. And I think that wave of grief and loss, you know, comes back, you know, knowing how much she's missed out on in seeing her grandchildren grow up.
And all the little things that, you know, your mam does, the little jobs and things that suddenly she's not there to manage, whether it's, you know, fixing up things for another member of the family, or did you sort of have to try and grapple with those things?
Well, we did. I suppose we tried to share the load as much as possible. And being, I suppose, myself and my older sister, being that little bit older, we had started to drive, and, you know, so we were able to help with collections. But there was, you know, Alexander and Rebecca were still very much in kind of junior school in the early days of their schooling. And on one occasion, I remember Alexander was playing a rugby match, and we had to sew a number onto his rugby shirt. And so Dad passed the shirt to myself or Fiona and said, would one of you do that for me? So, you know, I don't know where the needle and thread are. And so we went looking for a needle and thread, and we found it and did a very, you know, rush job of it. And Alexander went out onto the pitch later that day, and I think within about 30 seconds the number was on the ground. So we did our best, but
so somebody ripped it off. You did a fantastic job, and somebody pulled it off. And Michael, in terms of the business, one of the, you know, offices and serviced offices, one of the things that helped you enormously to grow the business was a connection with what bigger multinational companies were doing in coming into Ireland. Because am I right in saying they would have wanted to maybe have a small operation at first until they would see how things would go, and then when things went really well, they would have huge numbers employed?
Absolutely. When you think of the companies coming in, and you think of companies like Facebook, they started with 3 people in our office in 2008. Twitter came in with 1 or 2 people as well. You know, so they don't start with 1,000 people or 2,000 people.
Did you have any inkling at that stage that this company called Facebook, whatever it does, or Twitter, or whatever it does, might become such huge businesses?
No. They were only 4 years old in 2008 when they decided to come to Ireland. During the course of the conversation prior to them signing up, they said to me that they didn't want to pay a deposit. And I said to them, are you short of cash? And they said to me, no, we have just raised $300 million. And I said, what's the problem then? And they said, well, there isn't a problem. And I said, that's great, you know. So you're going to pay the deposit. So they
you
were
that. You should have taken the deposit in shares.
I know. But that's what they were. They were 4 years old in 2008 and they had just raised $300 million to fund their operation. And in the first year of their operation in Ireland, they didn't know where it was going to go, as one of their managers has said to us in recent times.
I'm sure you didn't plan to have three daughters working in the family with you. How did all that come about? Was it partially by accident or?
When we were planning to open Fitzwilliam Hall, which was 2005, my daughter Fiona was working in the restaurant business and she wasn't particularly enjoying it. And I asked her if she would like to join me. So that was the start of the family joining the business.
And what about you, Claire? Did you have any qualms about it? No? Your dad is laughing there.
So I actually trained as an occupational therapist and had been working in the National Rehab Hospital in Dunleary. And I then went to Australia. This was back 2006. But over the course of that year, obviously, I would be ringing home and hearing how everything was going. And obviously, Fiona had joined the business at that stage. And I was saying, you know, how are you getting on? I said, what's it like to work with Dad? You know, as sister to sister. And she was like, do you know what? It's actually really nice. It's really lovely. And she said, everybody really likes him. Which was I can totally understand that now, having worked with Dad. But, you know, when you've never experienced your dad in a work environment or never, you know, had the opportunity to work with your dad in that capacity, you're not quite sure what he's going to be like.
So how do you handle, Claire, the creative differences? Any rows?
Not so much rows, but we definitely, you know, give our opinions. But actually, Dad is very open to opinions and very open to
discussion.
Do
the three of you ever gang up on him in one of those opinion differences?
100%. 100%.
And Michael, at one stage, I read something that you were asked about advice of having family and children, your grown-up children working in a family business, and what advice you'd have. And there were a number of interesting things you said. One of them was, see your children as adults, not children.
Yes.
What did you mean by that?
When children are small, it's parent-child relationship. As they get older, you would hope it's an adult-to-adult relationship. And it's particularly important in a business situation that it's adult to adult.
Another point you made was you said, be a mentor, not a parent. Mm. And I was thinking to myself about, I don't know if you saw Succession and Logan Roy. He was very much neither a mentor or a parent. He was just the boss.
Yeah.
Is it hard to navigate all of that?
I haven't watched Succession, although I'm told by my children that I should. Now, they tell me that I'm not a bit like Roy. But
and we're definitely not like the children.
Yeah, it's not difficult to be the boss. No, but we're also fortunate that we sat down some years ago and we restructured the business, so all of the family are shareholders in the business.
So succession is something that you've thought about and you've spoken about together.
Oh, absolutely. So we're partners, and as I say, I may well be the senior partner. Well, I am the senior partner, but I'm still the partner, and we are equal shareholders in the business.
Being a single dad, when you look back now, do you think that helped you to understand your kids more?
I do. You know, many dads don't get the opportunity to really get to know their children. I regard myself as being very fortunate that I did, that I was forced to have time with them. There's no substitute for having time. You can be very, very busy, and your children recognize, you know, when you're very busy and stressed. When you have time with them, they relax and the relationship grows. There's no substitute for that.
Claire, when you look at the serviced offices now and flexible working and the kind of services that you guys provide, which is to have flexible, you know, work arrangements, in a way, this is a good time because that's the kind of office situation that maybe more companies seem to want, is that flexibility. But on the other hand, it's a difficult time in the office market, and even commercial property values have started to fall. And there's a lot of uncertainty around the longer term impact of remote working.
With any times of uncertainty, and I suppose, you know, more recently, the only certainty is that there's going to be uncertainty. You know, we've come through a recession, we've come through the pandemic, you know, there's still volatility in the markets. There's always going to be challenges and uncertainty. And I think that, you know, those companies that have been tied to long leases when they have needed to be released from them have really felt the pain in more recent times. So there's been a growing demand and a growing appetite for flexibility. And we have grown with that demand. So we started off, as I said, you know, with one location in 33 Fitzwilliam Square. We're now 10 locations across Ireland.
Michael, when you look at the property, as somebody who's been in the property business for a long time, was the crash a big wallop for you, or were you kind of partially insulated from it because you had a lot of these, you know, IDA, foreign direct investment type clients?
The crash was difficult for a number of reasons. Property values dropped dramatically and banks began to look at the security they had. We were forced to sell a number of our properties. Now, we were fortunate that we had leases on those properties. I was leasing the properties to the company. The company was secure, but I lost control of the properties. The properties are now owned by other people. So that was one aspect of the crash. But the other aspect of the crash was that companies who were coming to us were coming with a spreadsheet. While there was demand, because obviously people were more looking for flexibility than they would have been prior to the crash, the rates that we got were less.
And what about now, Michael? What do you see as the outlook now and the way the market is?
I see the demand for flexibility growing exponentially. When I started in property, leases were 35 years with 5-year reviews. Now a traditional lease is 10 years with a break of 5 years. So the demand for flexibility and the demand for serviced offices is going to increase dramatically. And this year, you know, just recovering from the pandemic, we're adding 40,000 square feet to our portfolio.
Okay. Well, Michael and Claire Kelly of the property services group Glandor, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
Thank you
You're
very much.
Most welcome, Richard.